If you want to be more involved with the Nonprofit Nook, we now have a Facebook community for listeners where you can help shape the podcast. You can suggest episode topics, answer polls, recommend speakers, and join the conversation with other nonprofit leaders who truly get it. Just search the Nonprofit Nook community on Facebook and request to join. We'd love to have you. Marketing for a nonprofit isn't about selling. It's about messaging. It's how we stay connected with our donors, our volunteers, and the people we serve. It's how we invite new people to become part of our mission. But sometimes it can feel never-ending. There's always another post to write, another story to tell, another update to share. And while I work hard to do all things marketing, there are definitely parts I dread, like creating and scheduling content for social media, or remembering how many times I need to talk about something so people actually hear it. That's where Engie comes in. Engie feels like a marketing partner who really gets me. It helps me figure out what to say, when to say it, and how to engage my audience in a way that feels true to my brand. It even helps me write everything in my voice and puts it all together in one big calendar so I can see how it's all going to play out. I can track what's working, plan what's next, and actually feel confident about my marketing. And I love the extras, like the monthly group coaching calls with experts, the simple social media scheduler, and the AI blog writer that makes creating content so much easier. So if you're ready for marketing to finally make sense, check out the link in the show notes. Trust me, you're going to love it. I want to take a quick moment to tell you about a platform I've been really impressed with. It's called Benevolate. Benevolate is a super intuitive CRM designed specifically for nonprofits, museums, and synagogues. It helps you manage donors, track relationships, and simplify the giving process, all in one easy-to-use place. What I love most is that the core package has no monthly fees for nonprofits, museums, or synagogues. None. There's just a small transaction fee, and donors can even choose to cover it, so your organization keeps more of every contribution. It's simple, smart, and built to make your mission easier to manage. If you've been looking for a better way to organize your supporters and grow your impact, check out Benevolate, where generosity meets simplicity.
There's a common theme throughout all of the pitfalls that I just want to call attention to, and that is just operating from in a reactive space. That is, you know, if you're always operating in reaction mode, that's going to limit your ability to be sustainable, but it's also going to limit your ability to be strategic.
Welcome to the Nonprofit Nook, the podcast for nonprofit leaders, board members, and community changemakers who want to build stronger, smarter organizations. I'm your host, Wendy Kidd, a longtime business owner and nonprofit leader, and I'm here to bring you real talk, real tools, and real stories to help you thrive in the nonprofit world. I'll be talking with local nonprofit leaders, community changemakers, and experts in everything from board development to fundraising and digital tools, sharing real stories and simple strategies you can actually use. Because running a nonprofit is hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Let's get started. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Nonprofit Nook. Today's guest is Tanya Wise. Her passion for social justice was shaped early by her own experience growing up on public assistance, and now she's spent nearly two decades helping nonprofits secure the resources they need to do meaningful, mission-driven work. She's founder of Wise, a Dallas-based nonprofit consulting firm, and she's known for blending smart strategy with hands-on practical support that actually moves the needle. Tanya is also the author of Become a Nonprofit Pro, 9 Common Pitfalls and How to Avoid Them, where she shares the same real-world advice she gives her clients every day, focused on helping nonprofit leaders build stronger, more sustainable organizations. Welcome, Tanya.
Thank you, Wendy. I'm really excited to be here. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I'm not going to lie. I'm fangirling a little bit because I read your book and it just meant so much to me. So I was just really honored that you agreed to come on the show.
Well, thank you. I just always hope that the book's helpful. So I appreciate that it is. And I'm also just always glad to be able to share it with other people. So that's what it's there for. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so tell me a little bit about how you got inspired to write the book? What made you decide to write all this advice up for everyone?
Yeah, so it really came about because I've been doing consulting now for about 12 years, and the book is really all of the most common advice that we give our clients. And so I felt like I was saying and repeating a lot of these things over and over and over again. And so our goal as a consultancy is to have as much impact as we can. And, you know, it's hard to do that when our capacity is limited by our own amount of time that we have to spend with clients. And so the book is a way of getting the most common advice out there in a broad way to as many people as possible. So that's really what motivated it. I also just think that I've spent my entire career working in nonprofits. And so I know what it's like to be in-house and to be a leader, even as a small business owner, as a, you know, owner of this consultancy. I understand what it's like to be in that leadership role where you're kind of expected to know all of the things and to know, you know, HR and to know IT and to know accounting and, you know, and the fact is you just don't always know what you don't know. And so this is, again, just an opportunity to share that most common coaching advice that we give our nonprofit clients. And we do specialize in working with startups, organizations that are in kind of that startup phase that I always want to be clear is not time bound. It's a state of being. And so you can be 30 years in operations and still be in a startup phase. So that's kind of a sweet spot for us. We really enjoy also working with founders, founder-led nonprofits, even founding CEOs, those individuals that are really rising up to help build the sustainability and the infrastructure for sustainability for nonprofits. So that's really the kind of target audience for the book. My hope is that everybody can get something out of it and find some kind of nuggets, but that's really the goal there.
I'm speaking for others when I say this, but thank you for writing it. I mean, when I read it, it was so helpful to see that advice laid out as if it were common for everyone. And that way I felt less alone, right? Like, yeah. This is what I was experiencing with my nonprofit experience. And I'm sure others have read it and gone, oh my gosh, she wrote exactly what I've been worried about. Thank you for the tools to help me get through that. Like, that's awesome. And I love that you also talk about the startup period lasting for so long, because that is so true. It doesn't seem to matter how long a nonprofit has been around. That's not really a good gauge of whether it's still a startup or not. So I think that's a really valid point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for saying that, because I do think that part of the goal is always like, just tell me I'm not alone, right? So I'm glad to hear that the book is validating as well. So yeah, thank you for that feedback.
Absolutely. So out of all the pitfalls that you wrote about, the 9 different ones, which one do you see most often? Which, you know, what's the most common issue you find, and why do you think that it's the most common?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And in thinking about that, it's so hard to just pick one. Because I think, you know, it's hard to just settle on the 9. But I will say that there's a common theme throughout all of the pitfalls that I just want to call attention to. And that is just operating in a reactive space. That is, you know, if you're always operating in reaction mode, that's going to limit your ability to be sustainable, but it's also going to limit your ability to be strategic. I think that that's something that's really common for nonprofit leaders, is to find themselves just operating from a place of just always being reactive. So I think, you know, when I think about it, I think nonprofit leaders don't fail because they don't care enough. They fail because they care about everything. And so it's really about being clear on, you know, what is most important to focus on right now. And I think that it's even more important in this day and age, you know, that that you have the mindset of, you know, instead of operating your nonprofit from a place of constant urgency, the idea is you don't want to operate from the perspective of like you're operating an emergency room. And I think leaders can right. find themselves in that space where it's like, what's the most important thing to focus on right now? And so we kind of joke here in our consultancy that because all of our consultants have worked in-house in nonprofits previously. So we joke that we know what it's like to be overworked and under-resourced. And so there's just, you can find yourself in this state of just constant reaction. And that doesn't leave a lot of space to be strategic, to really make sure that you're rooted in your values and that you, you know, I think are clear on where is the best direction, your energy, your time. Where do you invest your resources to have the greatest impact? So I would say when I think about all of the pitfalls, that's usually the common thread is being able to step back and have enough clarity to be responsive and strategic in your how you direct your energy and your time.
Absolutely. I'm guessing that's the mindset that you would say is kind of the biggest shift that they need to make, getting out of that essentially survival mode.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's so common to just have a scarcity mindset. You know, we kind of hear that term and it's real easy to, point it out when it's happening. But I think making that intentional shift to really, really having clarity on where you should put your focus, I think is key. And as leaders, that's important to protect yourself in that way, so that you're not just always kind of chasing and just burning yourself out. I think a lot of what I see is just the opportunity for burnout because you're just so busy reacting in a constant state of urgency. That's just not a way to protect your organization, your mission, or yourself as a leader.
Absolutely. That's one of the first things that I'm always working on with any of my business coaching or nonprofit leaders, my clients, is talking to them about, okay, how can we move intentionally versus just reacting to situations? I find that, you know, again, it comes back to being a small business owner. I always talk about how you need to work on your business, not just in your business. And I tell them the same things for nonprofits is you've got to set aside that time where you're looking at it from that overall picture versus just the minute, you know, if you're in the forest, just working on that one tree, let's back up and see the whole forest before we make big decisions. So,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So since you wrote the book, I looked it up. It was only a couple of years ago. What have you learned since that you would maybe wish you had included in the book or anything that's new that's come up since then?
Yeah, such a good question. So I would say kind of piggybacking on what I just talked about with scarcity mindset and just, you know, really trying to be focused is I just want to tell people that martyrdom is not a badge of honor. And so it's really more courageous.
You said it.
And, you know, I just think that it takes more courage to protect your own capacity. I think it takes courage to say no. It takes courage to be really clear on your values and then being willing to really be rooted in those values. And I think, you know, in the world of chaos, if you're not clear on your goals, your mission, how you're going to execute it, on your values, like if you don't have clarity, then chaos will define that for you. And then you'll just constantly be reacting in reactive mode. And so I think I've become more and more clear on just for myself as a leader, what I've seen in the world is just how important it is to protect your inner world, your own peace of mind. You know, if you are constantly on the edge of burnout as a leader, or you are in burnout, you're not doing anybody any favors because that does have impact with your mission, within the organization, within, to me, it's the most important thing to really be grounded and centered and have your own sense of focus where you're really caring for yourself. We call it here at WISE, we have what we call the 5 C's of caring. So we are expecting everybody that works here to show up in these 5 C's. So one would be caring about the community, caring about your coworkers, caring about your clients, caring about the company. And then the fifth is caring about your core, or that's yourself, you know, making sure that you're doing the work, your own work, to show up in your best self as a leader within the company. So I think that part is often missing, and it takes intentional effort to really do that self work. And I think that's what I would say I've really been thinking on since the last book, and how that relates to what I want to write about next is legacy. And how do you truly build a legacy? And I'll say it again, it's not by being a martyr, and it's not by building everything around yourself. It's around building sustainable leadership. And that means also self, you know, being self-sustainable. So.
Absolutely. You know, I think there's a lot of components to that too, because, you know, I think everybody goes on that journey at some point of figuring out, okay, I do have to put myself first to be able to take care of others. Right. Or at least I hope they do. But yeah. I think part of that is starting with listening. If you're not willing to be vulnerable enough to listen to the important people around you, I'm not saying go listen on social media. I'm saying listen to the important people around you. They will tell you if you are burnout. They're going to figure it out before you will, that yeah. you are burnout and you need to take a break, and that you need to figure out how to prioritize your life overall and find, you know, I hate the word balance. I don't feel like balance is a true, well, you're looking for proportionate. You're not looking for balance. Things don't mm-hmm. weight easily or equally in your head, but you have to figure out what those priorities are and what times are going to work for that and how to honor that in your own life. And if you're someone who just runs around saying, oh, I'm just busy all the time, that means you're not getting to the things that are important to yeah. you and to your community. So I'm yeah. with you. Like you gotta, the martyrdom doesn't work. It does not work for anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's so common in nonprofits to think that that's, you know, like the expectation of being a martyr. You know, I just don't think that that's feasible. I don't think that that is a badge of honor the way that people might feel like it is. Here, I think at our consultancy at WISE, we've become really clear on this. And I think you mentioned vulnerability. That's really important. We also think humility is a really important aspect of that. And then also just having the courage to have boundaries. So I like, I always think about it like this, yeah. is that if you're saying yes to everything, it's like you are actually saying no to things that might really matter. If you have a limited amount of capacity, then you really have to be conscientious about the yeses that you give. And I think that to me is discernment. It's setting boundaries. And that's like really hard work, because I think a lot of leaders, like I said, it's not about a lack of caring. It's about caring about everything. So you really have yeah. to get clear on what matters most. And then that's where you direct your energy and your time. So that's really what I've been thinking on a lot.
Yeah. So tell me more about this new book that you're thinking about. You mentioned legacy. I think that's a great yeah. way to start it.
Yeah. I've been thinking more about, you know, kind of what's the follow-up to become a nonprofit pro. And I really do think that as a small business owner, too, I've been really focused on how do I build something that outlives me. And that's been a big focus of mine over the past couple of years. But I see this a lot in founder-led nonprofits, where it's like, how do you really build something sustainable and that outlives you? So, you know, that really means that you have to put that infrastructure in place. You have to build out the leadership bench, the team, and then you really have to kind of start getting out of your own way. So I think that's going to be my next real focus on the next book. We'll be talking about how you build a legacy that outlives you. That's what I am excited to talk about next.
I love that. There is such a lack of that in the nonprofit world, and true with the small business world as well. But I think in the small business world, we hear it a little more often that we need to work on it.
Yeah.
In the nonprofit world, again, it goes back to everybody being in that survival mode. They're not thinking about the future as much. I also encounter it a lot when I'm talking to founders who have become the ED or have become the president, and we're now putting terms in. And they're like, but I started this. I always want to be here. And it's like, yeah. But that's not true. You don't want to be here forever. You are going to have other passion projects. You are going to have other things that you want to give your time and your life to. Mm-hmm. How do you want to make this sustainable so it outlives you?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I go back to the question that you asked about what is missing in the Become a Nonprofit Pro book, I think that that's kind of the big thing, the aha moment I had after the book came out and I started realizing, what am I trying to accomplish here at Wise Resource Development at this consultancy? And I do really think that people, so what we love working with our founders, where it's like they see a need in the community, they just start meeting it, all of a sudden it grows into something that now it's an organization, and, you know, it kind of starts to take on a life of its own. And again, there's this idea that somehow this person who's a founder is supposed to know how to do all the things, you know, and not necessarily knowing even how to put the infrastructure in place to really make it operationalized or have the impact that they desire, or even just making it sustainable long term because of the lack of infrastructure around it. So I do think that I have a passion around really trying to help founders put that infrastructure in place, really think through what that means and looks like. And we see it all the time in real life where you have everything saved on one executive director's laptop. And that person, this is a real cautionary tale. Oh, yes. If you read my book, you know, I love these, but like that person leaves, they go MIA, you never hear from them again. And they took everything with them on that laptop, you know, so that's, yep. That is unfortunately not an uncommon occurrence of things that might happen in the nonprofit world. So just really trying to be, I want to start giving more practical advice around how to protect the mission and make that work more sustainable long term. And so it's everything from, do you have the right IT support in place? Do you have the right Yes. security measures in place? You know, things like that. So practical, in addition to just like really asking yourself, you know, what is your goal here? If it truly is like, this is just your passion project and you're just, you know, you just want to do this and then you don't care if it survives after you're gone. Okay. Then I guess that's your answer to yourself. But if you really do think that this is something important, even outside of yourself, are you putting all the measures and plan in place to make sure that it outlives you?
Absolutely. A lot of the work that I do with coaching nonprofits is getting those foundational elements down, putting everything in one centralized place. I can't tell you how many times I have come across, well, this board member has a Google Drive that they set up on mm-hmm. their personal Gmail and they have part of it, but the previous ED has one too. And we still have shared access to that, but we don't really own it. And we have this other Gmail account that we use when we first got started. And a lot of it's in that one. It's like, new.
Yeah,
this is not how this works. This is not effective.
Exactly. Nonprofits get locked out of their website. Nonprofits get locked out of their social media. Yes. You know, there's a lot of things like that that happen. So just even from a technical perspective. And again, I do think some of this just comes from you see a need, you start meeting the need, and then all of a sudden it's like there are these demands on you to have this knowledge and skill set that maybe you just really don't have. So where do you find that, and how do you plug in to get the expertise and the know-how that you need? And so that's, I think, the next thing that I want to really focus on.
I fully support it. I'm here to help if I can help.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
That's so cool. Well, you know, I've talked about this book so much. I'm just going to actually bring it up, people. This is the book. I love the book. How can people implement your book? If they want to take this book and teach leaders in their organization or staff, like what do you recommend for them to take steps to use what you're teaching in this?
Yeah. So I would say read it not just like a book, but kind of as a playbook. So, you know, read it, consider what changes you might want to make, and then take action. So I really did try to write it in a way that there are some practical tips and tools in there. I would say probably the most common chapters that we encourage people to read, just because we encounter they need them the most, would be the first and second chapters. So just really kind of understanding how operations, programs, and fundraising all interact with each other, that you can't have one that's, you know, standing alone and holding the other two legs of the stool up. So, but the other one that we end up really encouraging people to read is the second chapter on the financials. There's a lot of practical information in there that we end up, I mean, in our everyday consultancy, talking about these things. Even just earlier today, I had a whole conversation around making sure that you're getting the administrative or overhead expenses covered when it comes to grant management, or if you're being the fiduciary over a grant application or grant grant funded project, making sure that your organization is funded to manage that. So we, you know, I just had that conversation today. I hope there's a lot of practical information in there that people can take and put into action.
I can attest to the fact that there is, for sure. If somebody's listening to this and they're like, I don't know that I've got time to read this whole book, and I don't know how to really allocate all the things, they're just feeling stretched thin. What's one area that you recommend they start with? Just one thing that they can start to improve.
I'm definitely going to say the financial piece. I mean, even if that's, if chapter two is the only chapter that you read in the book, you'll find enough. I have a friend who does nonprofit accounting, and we've taken that chapter kind of on the road in a workshop style. And we call the workshop Your Financials Tell a Story. And so it's really important to know what story your financials are telling funders. And I would say that that is probably the most common conversation that we have with our clients, or just really nonprofits in general, is to go through all the financial documents and say, and explain, this is what a funder is seeing. This is what how they're interpreting this information. And so I would say maybe the quickest big changes can come from that chapter in and of itself for nonprofits. It's very practical. There's also the last chapter that goes more into fundraising strategy that I think can be helpful. So hopefully all chapters are helpful, but I will just say, you know, if you only have time for one, start with maybe first or second chapter and go from there.
I love that. The financials do tell a story, and so many people don't understand their financials. So you and I might need to talk about this workshop and how we can make this happen.
Yeah. It's, to me, that's a hot topic. And so we love doing that workshop together. My accountant friend and I, her name is Melanie Curtin. She'd be a great one to have on your podcast, actually. I'll give you her information. So
that'd be awesome. I'm always looking for that. So, well, cool. Well, what else, anything else that you think people should know about you or the book, or just in general, that we haven't talked about yet?
I don't know. I would say, hopefully the book's helpful. I always, you know, I kind of joke that I turned an entire career into giving advice. I love giving advice to people. So
Same.
I'm happy to do that. If you ever want to just meet with me and ask me questions, I'm always happy to do that. I just think, again, our goal as a consultancy is to have as much impact as possible. And, you know, we feel limited by our capacity on time. So this book and even workshops, trainings, podcasts like this, it's our way of really being able to try to provide as much advice and as much of a broad way as possible. So I just appreciate being on the podcast and having the opportunity to do this.
Well, I love it. I'm so glad that you were able to join us. What's the best way for people to find you?
So our website is wiseresourcedevelopment.com. And you can also find me on social media, on LinkedIn under my name, Tanya Wise. You can follow me there. That's where I post most content is going to be on LinkedIn. We do also have a newsletter. We have a blog on our website that you can subscribe to that. We do have some free tools that we offer in our website. So if you sign up for our kind of intranet part of that, then we have some free tools in there. So, you know, those are probably the best ways to find me.
Okay, great. And I saw that you were a part of the nonprofit Nook community group, Facebook group that we have.
Oh, yes.
So people can see you there too. So thank you for joining us there. I appreciate that.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And like I said, I love, you know, I'm always happy to have conversations. So anytime I can, I'm a big fan of, you know, learn from other people, pay it forward. Just, you know, if you can learn from somebody else's mistake, that's great. So I love cautionary tales. I'm always happy to share what I see, in the work that I do. So thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining me today. And to our listeners, we will wrap this up. But if you guys have more questions, you can certainly reach out to us in the Facebook group. And other than that, have a great day, everybody. Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Nook. We're building better nonprofits together. If you found today's episode helpful, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with other nonprofit leaders who need support. Follow the Nonprofit Nook on social media and sign up for our email list for extra tips and updates. You can also visit thenonprofitnook.com to see the show notes and leave a comment telling me what topics you want next. Your feedback shapes the show. See you next time.